Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to The Honest by VetAhead. I know things look a little bit different around here. Like the rest of the world, we evolved. We expanded beyond the medicine connection, but we kept our essence. The Honest has been a space where we share our human journey. I used to say it was a space where we share the messiness of being human, but I realized our human journey is not messy. It is perfectly imperfect. It might look like an organized chaos at times or a beautiful balanced imbalance. Above all is what connects us as humans and make us relatable. If we are honest about our flaws, we might just discover our strengths. It will be inspiring, I promise you, if we are brave enough to be honest. Welcome to our house. I'm your host, Laila Proença.
Hello, everybody. Hello, VetAheaders. I have with me today on our podcast, yes, we are back with The Honest. And the title says everything is where we talk, have honest conversations. And today I have with me not only an amazing friend, as she wants me to say, an amazing chick. She is. Alita is with us here today. It is such an honor, such a pleasure. I told you when we saw each other at the previous conference, I don't know what it was, VMX, I said, you always so positive. It's always, and you always have so many positive, joyful people around you. You really zoot and you attract that. And I find that really, I feel like you Marie Kondo your life. Instead, like, that's what brings you joy.
Well,
and I love that.
Well, thanks. So, well, it got us together and that makes me happy.
So with me today, guys, Alicia, she's the co-founder and CVO, Chief Visionary Officer of Empire Veterinary Teams, EVT. But I want you also to showcase your professional bio for all our audience, please. Oh, and thank you for being here, my friend.
Oh, my goodness. It's a delight and an honor too to show up in spaces wherever you are. It's just, we're going to have fun.
Yes.
You know, it's funny. I've shared my story a bit over the years. And I think that I just did an interview a few weeks ago where I was like, you know what? I'm not sugarcoating this anymore. Like, you just need to know all the things. So I'm going to stick with that theme. So yes, vet med professional bio, I'll tell you a few things. I'm a CBT. I have my bachelor's in marine biology. That was where I started in the, you know, animal tract.
I keep forgetting that, the marine biology part. Oh my goodness.
The original goal was to was to be doing what you're doing, just simply with the, I really loved the cetaceans. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to work with humpback whales. So I did spend some time in the Florida Keys and really loved it, doing some sea turtle rehab and rescuing of some stranded whales and things. But I taught marine biology on Leukey in the reefs in the Florida Keys, which was phenomenal. So vet med journey, it's a lot similar to a lot of folks where, you know, I figured out I wanted to get in it. And so I started in the kennels and volunteering, and then did some reception work, and then worked into an assistant position and really fell in love with surgery and emergency. So, all right, well, I've got my bachelor's. I've got some experience now. I'm going to apply to vet school. Congrats, you got in. Just kidding. You're going to be a mom. So yeah. I could have done both. I know some incredible women that have, like Dr. Janine Irvin-Smith, who's with BlendVet. She did it. And my God, she's incredible. You've met her. She's just a fort.
Yeah.
I knew enough of myself at that point that I knew I wouldn't be able to do either justice. You know, something would have had to give. And I knew I wouldn't be happy if I didn't do 100%. So elected not to when I was in Canada at the time. And so I moved back to the States in 2008, which those of you that are old enough to remember, that was not a great year. So not many jobs for my husband at the time. But hey, if you work in vet med, you'll always have a job. So yep. I was fortunate enough, and then got my CBT while working full time and having a young little one, and decided, oh, that was fine the first time. I'll have a second kid. If we had him first, we wouldn't have had two kids. he's amazing now, but he didn't sleep for a few years, so neither did we. But I've worked in. What's that?
I was going to say, can you tell us what CVT is?
Oh, sorry. It gets a bit complicated, you know, because with vet techs, there's not one universal title, and that's just a pain. So I am a certified veterinary technician in the state of Pennsylvania, licensed through the state medical boards there.
And it's equivalent to RVT, right?
It is.
Right. Okay. That's why I wanted to make Because a lot of our audience knows RVT, registered veterinary technician. So it's the certified.
The only reason we're CVT instead of RVT in Pennsylvania is because no one changed the language when the bill passed. We were supposed to be RVTs, but they didn't. Really? So there's RVTs, LVTs, CVTs. If you are in Tennessee, you're an LVMT. And there's also RVTGs. And then if you get a specialty, you can be a veterinary technician specialist. It's a whole thing. So I've been doing that as a CBT. I worked in practice, clinical practice, as well as academia up until 2020. Mm-hmm. So in lab animal, small animal, specialty medicine. My father-in-law was a cattle rancher for eons, and I had my arms in a lot of cows. So very appreciative for the manufacturers of those gloves. My gosh, I've used a lot of them.
I agree.
And then, you know, learning how nude mice are very grumpy about not having fur. They're not very nice little critters, and it's not their fault. So it's been something that I've really enjoyed, the variety, the opportunity, the ability to literally flex yourself upside down and sideways into different roles within the profession. And it's been necessary.
Yes. So definitely the array of things we can do is, and I think you and I are living proof of that, because we start one way and here we are with companies, completely different things. And I do want you to talk about your company too, because I think it's very current what you provide, the service you provide. And I think also you're genuine in a sense that what you preach is what you do. Like, I knew of you through professional meetings, et cetera. I knew the topics you spoke. I've seen you speaking. But then when I met you, which I don't remember exactly how we met.
I do.
You do?
I do, because you had your amazing coat. It was the first time. It was at Viticus and at Western WBC in 2022.
Who introduced us? Because I think, was it Valerie Marconi?
No, it she was there, but I was like, I've seen your coat, and I just wanted to say, I think you're amazing. So I'm not a shy person. I don't know if you knew that, Lynn.
Just like me, I think we're like right there.
Well, I, you know what, to your earlier comment, which I just really, that makes me, you know, fills my cup all the way up, is when I see someone that is just doing amazing things and has just such a gorgeous energy. And I'm not going to shy away from that. Like, it's someone that I'm never going to see again, say at the grocery store, but they have the cutest nails. I'm going to tell them, right?
Because no, I'm just saying.
And I'm not being disingenuous. I really mean it.
Yes.
So it's really, to me, the journey that brought me here, and, you know, likewise to you, as I think a lot of us got into this profession to be the voice for the voiceless.
Yeah.
Which is our patients. But what I was starting to see was my colleagues, my teammates were losing their voice. And that is not okay.
How did you notice that? And by the way, for you that are just listening to us and not seeing us, I'm currently drinking wine just to be supportive of my friend up there that this is having a beer right now. Is it a beer or is that
It's not. It's I would have been enjoying a really much more adult beverage. It's it's tart cherry juice because I need anti-inflammatory stuff for my joints.
Well, you drinking cherry juice. I'm drinking grape juice.
Exactly. It's accidents.
You know why? I love talking to people. I love learning about people. You really cannot judge a book by the cover.
No.
And every time, the podcast to me was something I started. And it brings me so much joy. And for some reason, life, et cetera, I stopped doing it. And I was just reminded a month ago how much I love this. And I'm like, I'm going to make this a joyful moment every time. Because if I were to be with you somewhere, I would be having a glass of wine. We would be chatting. I was
100%.
Live that moment, you know, right now.
Absolutely.
Okay, so I do want you to talk about your company, because I think it's in the reasons. But before you go there, I want people to know your human bio, like not just your biography as a professional, but as what is your human bio?
Well, I mean, I think it's what I love about this human journey is we're not defined by a singular instance, right? Like we follow the trends watching our patients, right? So it's not a one-off reading of hypotension. I'm like, give me three instances. So you know, I'm so many things. We're all so many different attributes that make us who we are. And it's hopefully, you know, constantly evolving. It's like, I don't want someone at my, you know, 30th high school reunion, like, I don't think you haven't changed a bit. Like, really? I was hoping I did. So, you know, I'm an only child. I've got two human kids. I used to have a lot more furry kids. We're down to one very cranky cat. And she's liking being the only fur baby. So we're going to keep it that way for a bit. I've been married for almost 20 years. He puts up with a lot of BS for me, which is no small thing. So I think really it's I'm a traveler. I'm a lifelong learner. I don't want to ever, you know, get to a place where I'm like, I'm done. I love to read. I have socks that say, if you're reading these, leave me to my books. And I love to be outside, get some vitamin nature and paddleboard when I can.
By the way, you missing that big thing. Like, you always post in on Instagram that you go and you have a rock band. You're part of a rock band, right?
Yeah, I'm a singer. Actually, I write songs too. So I'm in a...
You write songs? That part I did not know.
Well, it's coming. It's fun. So my good friend, one of my best friends, her husband got me into this band. He's like, hey, my wife's, you know, her best friend sings and she can sound like Stevie Nicks. So we do a Tom Petty tribute band. Why doesn't she come in? And so it started off with a couple songs and now I do backup on all the songs and we travel around the Philadelphia area. It's a lot of fun.
I know. And every time you post, like you're all...
I put a wig on. I get all in.
So cool. And you have wigs on and you like, I just look at you and like, look at her living her life, being joyful. But you also have a lot on your plate. Like,
but that's how I do it. Right. I think those of us that are so busy, I mean, you can relate, practicing medicine, running a company, having your kids and all the things that you do. You make the time for things that are important. Mm-hmm. I don't believe in a work-life balance. It's impossible. So I'm going to give 100% to whatever I'm doing. So it's, how do you structure your day? And what are you prioritizing that day? And if I've learned nothing in the work I've been doing in the well-being sector of that med, and it's I've got to take care of the other parts of me, right? I can't bring joy and provide care if I don't take care of myself. So... It's my music has always been my therapy. Music and water. Like, I have to be in the water at some place. So like right now I'm in physical therapy for a shoulder subluxation and I'm like, I need to swim. Just fix it so I can swim. So it's all those things, right? Like, what brings you joy? And then how can you find those moments to create that joy with others? I mean, like when you and I and a few of our other friends got together in January at VMX, it's one of my favorite memories from that conference was just the five of us sitting around a table laughing. We held nothing back. I mean, everyone was probably in that, you know, that how was but we didn't care. We were so in just that moment of joy. And it's to me, and it's not toxic positivity, right? Like, it's not good vibes only. It's so authentic and it's raw, right? We've all lived. We've all had a different versions. We've all had some trauma and some bad things, you know, like I've survived, you know, a sexual assault as a teenager. And it's not something that you are glad it happened at all. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But, you know, way to bring the mood down. But
no, actually, I like you being raw. And thank you for sharing this, because I think, unfortunately, I think it's more common than we think.
100%.
All of that. Yeah. And it's a certain journey, life journey.
It is. And yeah. I mean, you blame yourself. I definitely did. And so my mom, she's a retired clinical psychologist, but she's like, there's something not going well with you. If you don't feel comfortable, but let's find someone that you can talk to. I mean,
we talk a lot about these things with the Me Too movement became very current, but at that time it wasn't.
No,
you wasn't. Even like pregnancy at that time, my friend, when she was 16, she got pregnant, her mom took out of school, was like that stigma, you know?
Right.
And then went to a school where nobody knew her. And like, I lost connection with her and she had a baby and I was like, what? It's just like, you know, kudos to you. I mean, your mom is a psychologist, but yeah, to give you that support.
I definitely know, and now I can put, you know, the terms to it, some serious privilege, and definitely being like a white cisgender heterosexual woman. Like, I've been through some crap, but it could have been way worse. I had the resources and the familial support that so many people don't. And, you know, now I, you know, as much as I definitely don't wish it happened, I'm stronger, sure as hell stronger because of it. I know what to look out for. I can coach my daughter to be like, hey, you might not ever want to leave a drink unattended. Just don't drink at all. Just don't do it. You don't like it anyway. It's, but also teaching my son that this is how you treat people. And this is how you don't, right? Because I think the other part of it too, Layla, is so much of it gets put on us as the women of like, well, you shouldn't dress like that. You should. I'm sorry. Did I say, please do this to me? Is that stamped on my forehead? No. So, and it, you know, it ties into the work that we do outside of the clinical skills is, you know, how do you human? And who are you working with these skills on? Is it just one subset? No. Everyone needs to know how to communicate. Everyone needs to understand, you know, work towards understanding and respect one another. And it's to be able to find the likeness in the people you work and play with, to be like, okay, you've lived. So have I. How can we, what shared experiences can we have? How can I show up for you today?
I was just having this conversation with my kids the other day exactly about that. Would you say that this is that's why I wanted to do this with you, because it's so rich as in a human, you know, it's so, everybody's layered, but I think you were so genuine in your layers and you show them. And so do I. And I don't find many people that share the layers so much like that. And you're so graceful in doing it. I feel I'm a little bit more abrasive when I do it. And you do that such like with, how can I say that? It's like a sweet is not the name, but it's so delicate. You know how you do it. I did not know that about you, by the way. And I was going to ask you if what in your upbringing, because I see the causes you fight for. I see that you stand by what you say. And I was going to ask you if there was anything on your upbringing that, you know, there was a pivotal moment. Like, there's not just one pivotal moment, as you said, but something that might have brought you to all these, you know, causes you fight for. And you just share peace. And I think it's so much to how we show up, right? I think you were talking about how we dress. And I was just having this conversation with my kids. You know, we were at the stoplight and my daughter saw this girl, probably, I don't know, 17 or something. She was wearing a short skirt. And my daughter was like, oh my God, this makes me so annoyed. I'm like, what is going on? And she was like, well, you see how short. I was like, you know, it's her body. And I was explaining to her and my son what slut shaming is. And you know what, at least I have a whole talk on that. I talk in conference about that. And I talk about slut shaming. And then my daughters, you know, like, I'm like, oh God. Like, I was like, and then I was explaining to her, I was like, you know, and I was explaining to my son, I said, say, when you see a girl like this, a woman, or a person, doesn't be a girl, sorry, like a boy, whoever decides to wear something short, it's not for you to stare at them. You know, this is not like a showcase for you. You need to be respectful and you can't be looking at them like this. And I say, especially with girls, because a guy is always going to be, a majority of the time is going to be stronger than us. So if someone is looking at us like that, it does not sound like a compliment. We are scared.
Yes.
So if you were staring at someone or whistle at someone, which is a very common behavior in Brazil, unfortunately, that's going to be perceived as a threat to me, not as a, oh my God, a compliment. And you need to be aware of it. And my son is a very handsome, tall black young man. But he also needs to be aware of that unfortunate way society is going to perceive him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and he's a very gentle soul. And I see him being bombarded by society. And sometimes he makes comments. I'm like, who taught you this? And
because it wasn't me.
Yes. And like, and so to bring into you, like, we do put the onus, even us as women sometimes. And I sometimes catch myself on that behavior. I'm like, huh, you know, that's an interesting choice. And I go like, Lila, stop this. This is a person's choice. But I grew up like this, you know, like my mom would say, oh, you look like a slut if I was wearing like black, red lipstick, you know. So it's like that, the stigma, and it's so interesting to hear you say that, because no, it's never your fault. It's never our fault. No. But how do you explain that to a child? I'm still struggling with that.
Well, I think you just how you did it, right? You don't shy away from the conversation. Is it a comfortable one? Absolutely not. Especially, you know, like when they're sitting there, like turning all different shades of red because they're embarrassed. But that's why I keep doing it. Because it's not something to be embarrassed or ashamed about. And as open-minded as, honestly, both my parents were, there were certain things that we didn't talk about, right?
And no, it's the times. I mean, it is what it is. Yeah.
That decision, my husband and I both, I'm very fortunate to have a partner in this journey where it's like, I'm not going to not do that. I'm going to cry, like, a lot. And I'm going to not hide that we don't get along all the time. And I'm going to walk around with my lumps and bumps and bruises. And it's hard work for me, too, let me tell you. But and share things, not all the details.
Do you cry in front of your kids?
Oh, my gosh. That just happened a couple weeks ago or this week. I had a really pretty awful week. And I just couldn't handle it anymore. And I was just like, I just need to let this out. And my son, he'll be 11 and, oh gosh, too soon, in like 8 days.
11? Okay.
And he gets up out of his chair and he's like trying not to cry because he's a very gentle soul as well. And he's like, go ahead, Mom, get it out. It's better if you do. And I was like, all right, thank you for that. That's going to make me cry even harder because that means that you get it. Because they're taught to not cry, right? It's not tough. Be a man, hold it in. And like you said earlier, all those societal things. And he is a white, blonde-haired, blue-eyed boy. He's going to be fine.
Okay.
So he has to be extra aware, in my opinion, and how we're raising him.
Yeah.
To see things, to recognize the inequities and to, you know, be okay with who he is, which is sensitive and empathic and not your typical, in quotes, boy. And, you know, our daughter is just rough and tumble and couldn't be bothered with makeup and is fearless. But
how old is she?
16.
So you have the opposite. I have a 16 boy and a 14 girl. Yeah.
Girl. Yeah. And she's,
am I going to survive? Is it going to be okay?
She's wonderful because what you're doing is you're talking with them. You know, and I think that's the difference, like how, you know, people, you've been talked down to, you've been talked at. What's the difference when you're talked with, right? Involving them in the conversation, really genuinely listening and asking for the opinions, but not dismissing it and really hearing where they're coming from. It's to keep that conversation going and to, you know, when you're complimenting someone, not just on their appearance, even though I did mention someone's cute nails, but like, you know, how kind they are and how they are intelligent and they're insightful and their generosity, like things that make them who they are, not the face that they present. And I credit my upbringing for that. Yes. And then a lot of really great therapists that were like, you need to maybe stop playing these old, you know, songs that you heard your whole childhood of, like, you know, you can be told you're good and you're beautiful, but the person telling you that doesn't believe that about themselves. So what are you going to believe? The nonverbal messages, right? So you really got to watch what you're saying. And so for me, you know, and you don't have to have kids to have this experience. It's just, it's really helpful to be around younger humans for that perspective. So nieces, nephews, kids in the area, like volunteer and spend some time with younger humans. They're not as much of a pain in the butt as you think they are.
No, they're lucky to be around. And you know that I started bringing my kids to the conferences. I actually enjoy their company. And would you, like, I still want to know, like, from your upbringing, like, what do you think shaped you for these causes? You're like, you're so big and you practice what you say again one more time, but you're so big and like recognizing privilege, recognizing, like, I know why I am, because I became, well, in Brazil, a minority for being a woman is a very sexist country, but honestly, in Brazil, I was raised white. Like, right? My skin tone in Brazil is considered white, almost Caucasian. Yeah. And when I came to the United States as a doctor, not just a doctor in veterinary medicine, but also a PhD, I immediately became an immigrant and I immediately became minority like this, like a woke minority treated as, and I wasn't a veterinarian anymore, right? Because there's no, our diploma in Brazil is not recognized here. So immediately I became a nobody. Like I was very well known in my field in Brazil, a renowned name, like an authority person. And I came here, I become, as a person, as a human, I become a minority. And as a professional, I become a nobody. So I know, because I went through that, that's why privilege. And then I adopted my kids, which happened to be Black. And so I became even, even more aware. But so I'm almost, I almost have an obligation because I, it was so present. But like, how about in your life? How did it shape you for you listening? Like, if you don't mind describing, you just said your kid, you were just the description of a kid, but you wear your heart on your face. Like, you have short hair, you have, you know, you have piercings, you are always dressing authentically, which I love that about you. Where, what happened during your upbringing that made you so aware of privilege, made you so aware of the underdogs?
You know, that was always my mom, her champion. Because, and I actually, now that you brought that up, I want to ask her, she would always say, you know, if there is someone that isn't either welcome at the table or doesn't have a seat, you figure out a way to get them there. And that being said, you know, I did grow up in Northeast Philly, which at the time was a very diverse community. It still is. But we were raised in the 80s and 90s to be colorblind, which is not effective.
Yeah.
And then from a sense of privilege, my, you know, I'm not a religious person. I'm a spiritual person, but my dad is a retired Protestant minister. So grew up in the fishbowl of Christianity as a preacher's kid. Uh-huh. There's two kinds of preacher's kids, Lila. There's the good ones and there's the rest of us. I chafed against it. You know, I like the underlying principles of Christianity, of love and kindness, acceptance and respect, but I never saw it really in practice with a lot of the congregants. They were so hypocritical. And that made me really mad as a little kid, like mad. You know, I'd go to summer camp, but like, you know, Christian camp. And I was like, ugh. And they're like, well, we're going to sit around and talk about this, but you don't believe it. And I'd get asked to leave the fire circle because I was a troublemaker, you know? So, but I did.
You have to leave the fire circle.
Right. But I think really, I would love to say I always was an activist, but I wasn't. I wasn't always aware. I definitely, looking back at my middle school and high school friend groups, they were so not. We were not inclusive. We were exclusive. We were, and I didn't like it, but I didn't fight against it either. I didn't stand up. I was much quieter in high school. And in college, I started to figure out who I really was and who I wanted to be. And I was like, I like this. I like not, you know, I was like, I'm going to pierce my nose and get tattoos everywhere because I never could before. I mean, I had my ears pierced all through high school. That was my rebellion and snuck out of the house until I got caught twice. But it was really, I'd have to say, it was probably 7 or 8 years ago where I got a huge wake-up call. I was still in clinical practice and got a call from my mom. And she's like, I need you to step away from your desk, and found out she had breast cancer. And it wasn't good. And so it made me realize how quickly life can change and how the things that matter can be taken away from you. And then getting into the healthcare system and having to fight for her, but not nearly as hard as one of her friends that was going through it. And I saw the inequity in the human healthcare system to a woman of color. And I was like, she's got cancer too, stage 3. My mom's stage 2. Take care of her. And my mom is my person. So I shaved my head. That was in 2015, 2016, I can't keep track anymore because I realized I was hiding behind the privilege that I've always had. I had long, curly blonde hair. That's why the wig is kind of fun, because my husband's like, oh, you used to look like that. Now, for those of you that can't see, I have a frock and it's platinum blonde. Sometimes it's purple. Right now it's lavender. So I got rid of the hair and then started getting rid of preconceived notions and things and started to unlearn what I was had and understood what optical allyship meant. Oh, that's actually not okay. And saying this instead of that, and understanding what it means to say Black versus African-American, what is Latino versus Hispanic, what is all these things. And, you know, when I was a little kid, I took piano for 10, 12 years, and I thought my piano teacher was the most handsome man on the planet, and my mom was going to leave my dad for him because my dad's 6'5", but my piano teacher is 6'8", so he's taller, so she's going to go for the tall guy. He was the most beautiful gay man. He did the makeup at my wedding. I mean, that's how oblivious I was, you know?
Yes, I hear you.
So, and to see him feel that he had to hide who he was when he was one of the most purest, most amazing souls I've ever known. And he passed away not ever knowing what love was because he hid himself away. And that just broke my heart. So it's really because everyone, everyone deserves to have joy and to feel that they belong and to have a place where they can show up and be heard and seen. And I
had no idea that was the reason behind your haircut.
Well, yeah.
I mean, they thought it like that. It's like, wow. Is mom still with us?
She is. And other family members need to stop getting cancer. So, I mean, the deal with my mom was I'm going to keep the side shaved until you're fully in remission after 5 years. And she's on year 6, 7. So
what's your name?
Cindy.
Cindy.
Yeah. We got matching tattoos, her first and only. I was like, yes.
Oh, my God. That's awesome.
And now my dad is like, well, we don't have a matching tattoo. I'm like, you're 71. He's like, so? I'm like, all right, doing it. So it's. And I think that's what's been the fun journey, is realizing that no matter how old you are or what your experience has been, there is always an opportunity in a way that you can learn and unlearn and grow and change. And it's okay.
Yeah. Just are there moments that, oh, sorry.
No. It was really just because that's who you were doesn't mean that's how you have to stay. And that's what the journey's about for me.
It is a process, right? It's a journey. From knowing you and your personality, although, again, I think I come across way more abrasive than you.
I don't think so.
Thank you. But I do a little bit. Like, I'm way more like a bull. What is your sign? I think I asked you that, but I forgot.
I'm a Cancer.
Yeah. So it's even more sensitive. Yeah, that what I wanted to say is not sweet. It's more sensitive. Although I have to say, I think I shared this in the other season of the podcast. At one time I went to the therapist. I was 20 something, mid 20s. And he was one of my best therapists to this time. And he was an older guy, and he was like, oh, so like the intake session, like, why are you here? Blah, blah, blah. I said, okay, you know what? I'm here because I want to be sweet. He was like, what? I said, I want to be that type of person that everybody goes like, you know, Lila, she's so sweet. Oh my gosh, she's so sweet. Like, nobody says that about me. And for some reason, I was trying to fit on something I was not. I always felt like I was too much. I always told that I was too much. Mm-hmm. And I see a little bit that on your personality. But I think because you have a more, sensitive. I'm not a sensitive person, but you have a more sensitive approach. Do you have times that you felt you were too much?
Oh, God. Ask my daughter. Mom, you're so extra. So, yeah, I think it depends on the setting. And I can definitely be over the top. I think the sense of what you're like, I'm a bit of a control freak. So I have control issues.
How are we all? That's so good, dude. It's so good to control, though.
I have a lot of A's in my name. I've got to be that type A, right? I have to have that control. And I wouldn't say, and I hear what you're saying. I'm not trying to take that away, that want for me to change. But the words that come to mind that I think of with you are vibrant and inspiring and genuine. Like you are such and a beacon. Like I just, you draw people in and you are doing such amazing things. And I just want to hang out with you and just laugh about silly, silly, silly things. And but also in the same conversation, talk about, hey, by the way, we went through the crap, right? Yeah. Okay. So you can cover all of those things. And it goes back to, it's not one word or one instance or one role that defines us. Mm-mm. And that's the beautiful
thing.
The people that we bring into our lives, like we're all here for a reason. Like there's a reason I'm not in clinical practice anymore. There's a reason that I'm connected to the people that I'm connected to. And I'm, you know, I'm going through right now some stuff with potential like IP theft. And it's like, I don't know what the reason behind this is. I'm not a fatalist, but this is some crap, but I don't like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the things that you realize, you know, you find out who the real people are. And who's going to show up for you and in what way? And sometimes that's a like, okay, maybe I'm a little too trusting here, but I don't want to ever give up on that either. I like looking for the good in people.
And I feel you. And I feel you do. I really feel like I always feel very welcoming by you. I am the type of person people usually say, you know, I didn't feel you so approachable, but then once I got to know you, oh my God, you're so approachable. So this, but my first impression usually to people are not, of course, in the conferences, like I have my persona, I'm smiling, et cetera, but in a normal life, that's usually, I'm more reserved in the beginning, like 5 minutes talking to me, then I'm like being goofy and whatnot. But you know, one thing you said, and you kind of said something that brought me, I just learned doing therapy right now that we have this saying, there's a reason why this happened, right? And you said it made me stronger. There's a reason. And I just learned it was like mind-blowing to me. There's no reason why bad things happen. Like bad things are horrible. And like you as a young woman or, you know, my kids are going through like serious trauma. And they kind of taught me how to word a little bit different. It's not they said it's not a reason because you should never be convinced that there was a reason for you to go through that, like something horrible, right?
Yeah, that's
true. It's your fault. Like there's a reason why you had to go through that to be shaped. No, like you are, like I said, you're survival. So there's no reason for you. There's a cause.
Oh,
like, cause that happened, but not a reason. And to me, that was so mind blowing because like, listen, I'm all about words. Like that's why I say Zoomed. That's why like I say, but I was like, I never thought about that because I would tell them there's a reason that made you who you are. I'm like, no, there's no reason. Literally, you know, nobody's to go through that, right?
You're done. That's it.
But that's why it wasn't me. It was my therapist. But, you know, I was like, wow.
Words matter.
Words do matter.
Holy, you just changed the whole. Okay, well, I guess I have some more things to share with my therapist next week.
And the other thing too that I'm going through a moment right now, you know, it's dialectical behavioral therapy, DBT, which is really great for people that endure like really severe trauma. So dialectical behavioral therapy, you also learn something called radical acceptance. And I was like, me, I don't radical accept anything. I change it. I fix it. I do it. But what radical acceptance means is not that I had the wrong concept. Like, radical acceptance is not that you have to accept whatever is thrown your way and just live with it. No, it's accept that happened, not making it right. So that trauma happened to you, period. And that's a fact. That's radical acceptance. It's not to accept that you had to go through it or that was right. What happened to you was not fair, was not right, but it happened. So that's the radical acceptance. Like, okay, this happened to me. It doesn't make it right. And so now what? I had some options, right? So from here, what are my options? Or you are in a toxic relationship, either work, relationship, right, family, and then that's the fact. Radical acceptance. This is happening. It won't change. So what are my choices, right? And I'm going through this, and it's not easy. I'm going through a period of radical acceptance of things that are being thrown my way. And I'm like, why is this happening? Like, you know what? There's not reason, it's a cause, there's a causation for that. And I need to accept this and not suffer because that is actually bringing me stress. It's distressing me, right? So that to me was like, oh my God. And there are moments, honestly, I will say to you, like, and that's another thing we shouldn't do. And I saw you doing it too, like, oh my God, what I've been through, it's so much less than what other people go through. And it is, like, I'm not going to compare myself of these women that are being raped right now in war, like gang rape and stuff. Like, right. Yes, it is different, but at the same time, it's your reality, right? Mm-hmm. And I will tell you this, Alisa, like, there have been times during this past 3 years, that I truly wanted to give up. Like, it's like, and I'm a strong person, and I'm like, it is too much. Like, we have a say, you know, in Portuguese, like, stop the train because I want to get off. Like, stop it. It's just too much. Do you have times that you can recall that you wanted to give up? And I'm not talking about giving up on life. I'm talking about giving up. Like, because I see you also as so resilient, so strong. Like, are there moments that you felt like you cracked and you about it? That's it. Like,
150%. And I'm totally not, I'm going to incorporate this, the radical acceptance and the causation verbiage. That is brilliant. So thank you for that gift today. I needed that. Well, yeah. I mean, there's only so much one person can take. And, you know, there's that whole, you know, the trending of do it yourself, right? How about we do it together? Mm-hmm. And so for me, I tend to, and thankfully have a good cohort of women friends that are like, all right, you've been cocooning yourself for a while. We're breaking you out. And let's deal with this. I'm like, fine. I don't want to. So it's really, I've been so fortunate to find, you know, people that get me and that get this wacky, wonderful life experience, and that, yeah, this sucks. And just because you're stuck somewhere doesn't mean you have to stay there.
How did you, like, that brings me to another thing. You're talking about your cohort. That's something I found out to my village, and I found out my women, and they happen to be strong women. Yeah. I don't currently have a man in my village, friend or, you know, romantically speaking. I just learned that what fills my cup are likewise, like, women they're really there for me in different, like, each one of your cohort of a village helps you in a different way, and you help them in a different way. But that brings me to, and I told you that multiple times, including today, like, the people you surround yourself with, the positivity around you is just, and I'm not talking about positive toxicity, I'm talking about really the vibe. How do you choose? Is that like a conscious, intentional thing?
No.
Choose the people around you.
Well, you got to meet Sarah. So, And so she is my longest, bestest friend. And I don't know. I pick up on energy. I really have always been very sensitive to it. My grandmother taught me as a very young girl how to kive. So it's a practice of, it's pretty much meditation, which I love. It's funny because I don't like meditating. I do it all the time, but I don't call it that. So it's when you get into a quiet, comfortable space and you focus inwards on a person that you feel like you need to connect with. And you can then, when you practice that and build the time up, you can eventually start seeing them where they are and what they're doing, and they feel you with them. And it would be the weirdest thing. Like, she inevitably would call me. She's like, don't worry about that chemistry test. It's just at a test. You'll be able to make up the exam, you know, the next time. Like, I didn't tell my mother that I just failed that exam. How did you know? She was amazing like that. And so she also worked with me on recognizing, now that I'm talking about it, it must be all my breakthroughs today, Lila, my goodness.
Right.
So seeing auras, like the energy fields around people and the colors. I'm very much a visual and kinesthetic person. Like, I like to see things and then experience them. So,
well, do you see the aura? Like, are you actually able to see the aura? Oh, that's nice.
I did undergo some training for that years ago. I'm out of practice, but I still can get a good vibe from people. And so I do you know, tap into that. But I've also been just in the right place at the right time. And, you know, like energy, and in this case, it's not repelling, it's attractive, right? So instead of opposites attracting, it's like, hey, this energy feels good. We feel good in this space. I want more of that.
Uh-huh.
And how do I work to cultivate that? Because it's not something that just is without effort, right? But it's not work, you know, it's something that you are invested in, not because you have to, because you want to. And I like how I show up in these spaces with these people.
Yeah.
And, you know, enjoy a ridiculously decadent flight of pancakes at a restaurant, or just have ridiculous stories, or dance like a fool and fall and be okay with it, and show up and be like, I'm wearing this outlandish outfit because I wanted to. And then this thing, great. And just, and that genuine support. I think it's really, Lila, when you shed the things that hold you back, the real you shines through. And whatever energy that brings is what you're going to bring to yourself.
Oh my God. Now you got me something to think, because I feel like I'm still wearing my armor at all times.
Because
it's thick and it's metal, heavy. Like not even x-rays can, like not even an MRI can go through it.
Don't worry, the MRI, you're going to get sucked into the tube. But
I know that's right. No metal there. But my point is the magnet. But my point is metal, CT would be a better example. But
yes, I hear what you say. I do.
Yeah. And
it's scary.
Yeah. It is scary.
And that's where trust do it, right? And so
I think perhaps maybe might be a wrong perception assumption from your personality, but perhaps is that what I pick up on you different is that you seem open and you seem willing to pay the price, because at the end of the day, we get so much more if we are available and put ourselves up there than not. But we do get hurt in the process. And it seems like you're willing to pay the price versus I'm scared, kitty. Like people think I'm so all of these, but at the end of the day, and I am professionally speaking, I'm very confident now, but at the end of the day, like I reserve myself and I feel like I have so much love to give and so much love I don't give because I'm scared.
Yep. And that is okay too. You know, it's not that there's one right, like there's a right way to live your life, right? I still, yes, I'm very open to a point, right? Share things to a point. I'm not going to hide the fact that I'm a survivor of assault. I'm not going to hide the fact that I lost a child in my early 20s, right? Like I'm not also going to announce that to people. Hi, nice to meet you. By the way, you know, it's not really start a conversation. No. If it comes up and as our friendship or what have you evolves, then yeah. But I'm open to the potential, but I'm also very cognizant of who I'm with and who I'm going to let in. So there's levels of that, right? So you can have, it's like different feelings of love, right? Like we love our children, but we're not in love with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We love our families and our friends, but it's different variations. It doesn't mean we have more or less to give. I mean, think about it. Like if you have a rubber band around your fingers, it's tight, but guess what? You can stretch it and fit another finger.
Mm-hmm.
Love doesn't change. It just.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I think because I was faced with losing someone that I love dearly, potentially, I know how short life can be. You know, my one cousin who is like a brother to me, because I don't have any biological brothers, he's battling pancreatic cancer. That's not generally a good outcome, but he's doing it.
Yeah.
And so he's living, right? Like every moment that he gets to go and do something, it's a win. And what am I going to wish I did more?
Mm-hmm.
Right. But that doesn't mean I haven't been hurt by it. I sure have. Like I'm going through, like I alluded to right now earlier, you know, there's some potential loss of things and a friend, that colleague that I'm dealing with some stuff because I trusted. The alternative is I didn't, and I would have missed out on the rest of the members of my team. Right. Simple. Have I paid the price? Yeah. Will I pay it again? Probably. But I think
in this thinking, how do you, so this is a great, so you talked about your intuition, you talked about like the energy and you talked about your business, you talked about someone that you had trusted and perhaps, you know, the point. How do you actually make decisions?
How do I make decisions? Oh,
like you have your business, you know.
I have a magic pill.
Can you send it to me? Because the fun is, like, you know, you need to, like, life is a succession of decisions.
It is.
I'm
very, very fortunate in that the co-founder, my business partner, has got a much more pragmatic, logical head on her shoulders than I do. I make decisions from here and she makes them from here. And so between the two of us, we're a full person. So business wise, I say, okay, this is what my gut's saying. This is why. And she's like, I hear that. I don't disagree with it. This is where I'm coming from. Oh, I didn't look at it this way. So I get perspectives. And then ultimately we have to make a joint decision. But in like my personal life, it's very much, all right, if I do this, this could happen. If I don't do this, this will happen. I decide based upon what I can live with, knowing what I can't live without.
That's a good approach.
It doesn't always work.
That one I can live with. Say that again.
I base my decisions on what I can live with. So if something goes wrong, what am I willing to live with versus what can I not live without? Right. If it's going to compromise my children's safety, then oh, absolutely not. Right. I can't live with that or without them. Right. So do I need that? The MacBook? No, I can live without it. And plus, I'd have to relearn. I'm so used to the
come to the dark side. Come to the Apple side. Go back.
I have an iPhone. I have all the other things. All the other Apple products. I'm just like,
when you see that you can access a folder in your computer on your phone, that's a danger for me. Like in a conference, you ask me something, I can access my computer on my phone. I'm like, oh, wait. I was like, okay, sold.
It's definitely coming there. So it's a combination. And really I've also learned, Lila, I can't do everything. I shouldn't do everything. I'm not an expert in everything. So I surround myself with experts.
In that tangent, what would you say your superpower is?
Connection.
I would say that about you too.
I really love having moments, even if we weren't on a podcast, you and I would be having a conversation like, yes.
Very similar.
Yeah. But also if I hear something that like kind of perks my ears, like, oh, I need you to meet Katie, right? Or I need to connect you with this, or this project would be perfect for you. That's what I mean. We don't live in a vacuum and it's not about me. So.
And that's exactly how I met Katie. Like I was lecturing at, I think, AHA. I don't remember right. No, it was not AHA. It was something before. AVMA, I think.
AVMA, that's where we, yes, yes.
Yes. And I was giving a lecture on the likability dilemma for difficult women. And then you had told her, that's what she told me. Like at the end of the lecture, she came to me and I didn't know her, what is it, the name of the ID, whatever we call. It was flipped, so I couldn't even see her name. She said, hi, I'm Katie, my friend told me. She didn't even say your name, like, to begin with.
Oh.
Told me, come here to see this lecture, and I'm so amazed. And she just told me, like, go see this lecture. I didn't associate the name with the person. And she told me she's wearing a pink coat. You need to see her. And then when I chose your lecture based on the name, and then when I came here and I saw it was the pink coat girl, and then she said it was Alicia. I was like, oh, my God. And then Katie was like, okay, I want to introduce myself because now I'm your best friend. I was like, oh my God, you're amazing. And yes, she is a great friend. So you did connect the two of us without even, you know, and from there, she invited me to speak at AHA and we did a podcast and we are like still friends and talking. And it's just like, I would say that is definitely your superpower.
I can't fly, so I'll go with that.
Now you share pretty like heavy things that you've been through and you are going through right now. How do you cope, Alicia? Like, how do you?
Oh, well, I have an excellent therapist. And she's not afraid to call me on my crap, which I need.
Oh, I love that. I'm a therapist. I always tell them, tell me as is.
Well,
like, I need that.
Great. She's like, well, you came because you said you wanted to grow. I was like, okay, but all right. She's like, well, lactic acid, this is the burn. And I have a really awesome network, both within VetMed and without. And I will sometimes just hop in the shower and sing my head off. The acoustics are great. I lean on my husband. He is my best friend. We actually got into a real rip roar of a fight last week, and we're okay. Shared that with
fighting. How do you fight?
Oh, I yell.
And I do too. Oh my God, I'm a yeller. Not proud of it, but I am.
Well, I don't think it's something to be, proud or not proud of, right? It's just, that's how I react. I explode. And then the next day I'm like, so I may. Thanks for that. Because at the end of the day, like, conflict isn't something that we can avoid. It's part of every relationship, right? Like, mm-hmm. So that's why, like, I hate conflict. Yeah, it's great. I don't mind it. So, like, I'm like, this is healthy and I feel better. But, I never heard my parents fight. So if they did fight, I was like, oh, this is bad. So it's another, like, my daughter heard almost everything. And so, like, all right, I know you heard it. We're going to figure it out. We're not leaving each other. We're just, I'm mad. I don't like what's happening. I felt very righteous. I still overreacted. And so then we checked in with our couples therapist, right? So, but overall, he pushes me too. And I had to laugh because it was at a swim meet, like I think maybe almost a year ago. And I just like really shaved the sides and really gotten short and really bold. And is your husband okay with you doing that? And I did not put my finger on. Like I didn't, I just turned and looked at her like, are you, what did? And it was the greatest, like, so we handled that situation. It's like, it's my hair and I'm fine with it. So he is. And I get home and I tell my husband, he just starts laughing. He's like, as if I would even try to, contain you. Like, it's just, so he's my champion. And I don't journal like a lot of people. I encourage other people to do. I paint. And I hang out and drink cherry juice with good friends.
That is amazing. That is amazing. I love that. I at the end of the year, I was like, my dishwasher, washing machine at the time had the rubber had a crack on it, whatever. Long story short is I looked all of this in YouTube. I said, I'm going to fix it. And I am the handy person at home. I'm the one that does everything. And I love doing it. And I always incorporate my kids, my daughter. It doesn't matter whoever's around me needs to help me. And they enjoy it. And so my daughter was at home at that point and said, hey, let's go with me to Home Depot. I want to buy this. I saw this product, whatever, that will fix it. So we go there and we see this sir that works at Home Depot. And I'm like, Chloe, let me just ask, because I don't know where these products are in this store. And then I said, hey, sir, like, I need this product. And I showed the picture, right? And he was like, it's going to be on, we don't have this specifically. I said, well, do you have something similar? It doesn't need to be this brand. He was like, what did your husband tell you to buy? And I'm like, my daughter, like, damn, I'm like, she's looking at me. I'm like, I don't have a husband, sir. I'm like, I was so speechless. And then I was like, okay. And then I was like, well, thank you. And then I go to a woman working at Home Depot. I was like, she's going to get me. And I was like, and she took me there. We walked there and I said, doesn't need to be this brand. I just need this product. Like, and she was like, well, I don't know. Like, why don't you call your husband and ask? I'm like, that's like, that was December. I'm like, do I? I don't think I'm a person that. Yeah, people will get the vibe that I'm doing this for my husband, but somehow. So it's curious you say that about your hair. And by the way, I had my hair with the same haircut as you, like, not long ago.
I remember.
And I went to Brazil, and there it's considered like only lesbians wear that haircut, which I had no idea.
All the time.
Really?
I'm like, well, I'm flattered. number one, because I also drive a Subaru. So let's go with the whole bias thing there.
Oh, is that a thing too? The Subaru? I didn't know.
Oh, yeah. Apparently, like an Outback. Yeah. So I was like,
really?
And by the way, I'm listening to the Indigo Girls. So let's just keep this going. So number one, thank you. Number two, F you very much for assuming. And number three, thank you next.
So oh my God. I have a really, really good friend. She's a really good friend and she's lesbian. Oh, she's bi actually. But we used to work together and then she would come to me. I was married at the time. And she would come to me. Are you sure you're not lesbian? I'm like, yes, I'm very sure. And she was like, she would come like, are you sure? Because she had a twin sister. And she's like, I have my twin sister and she is bi too and is bi too. And, you know, I really want you guys to meet. I said, I would love to meet. If she's anything like you, I would love to meet her, but I am not lesbian. Are you sure about that? I'm like,
Yeah.
I was like, I do think it will solve my problems if I was lesbian.
But, I mean, relationships are relationships, regardless of gender.
You know, like, the problem I'm having is, okay, there's the relationship problem. And then you have, on top of that, a man not knowing how to deal with a strong woman. So I need to deal with the relationship and the fragile ego. So I will deal only with the relationship part, you know?
You know, I used to, it's funny. My girlfriends in high school, because we were girls at the time, and now we're hopefully act like women on occasion. We always used to say, boys are bad. We need a man.
So
that's the problem, right? I mean, because, and that's the phrase, right? Like they call us as, you know, girls, we're grown-ass women. You're calling me a girl. Meanwhile, man up and all these other things. But So there's so many, we could probably have 13 podcasts about all of these things.
I know, but it will solve my problems. At least I would just deal with, I'm not shying away of problems. I just want to deal with the relationship problem. I don't want to deal with your personal problems, your autonomy problems, your like confidence problems. Like, you know, your balls are not my business. And your testosterone levels are not my, you know, reason to exist. But yeah, I just, and I keep telling her, I was like, I really wish. I have so many that I would like be so happy with. But that's just a tangent on this topic. do you have a chip on your shoulder? I can't see that on you.
About what?
I think that might be another very big difference. I constantly have a chip on my shoulder, right? I'm always in the defensive mode and I always feel like the underdog. Just recently I learned, I don't know if this is too soon or not, but I recently learned that I grew up with a narcissistic mother and a lot of this is because of that. And I couldn't explain the behaviors. And just now my sister and I, after years of therapy and all of that, we like, This is why. And so I have this chip on my shoulder about justice. Like to me, if something seems unfair, like it seriously, like it drives me nuts. Like I can't with injustice, unfairness. Like I just, because that's how like, you know, narcissists do to you. They like, you know, they gaslight, they change everything. But anyway, so to me, when that happens around me and I have this chip on my shoulder, like that I'm always like an underdog, always having to prove myself. I can understand that now as an immigrant, but in Brazil, not necessarily the case. So do you have that chip on your shoulder always? I don't notice that on you.
I'm a white woman. What do I have to have a chip about? Well, really, I mean, there's the inequity of the gender issues that are prevalent, but really, no, because hashtag privilege.
Yeah.
So I get mad for other people. And do I get irritated and annoyed with some crap I have to deal with? 100%. I'm human. But I haven't had to deal with that. You know, I've had some events that have happened to me, some causes. But no, I had supportive, amazing parents. I had educational opportunities. We weren't rich, but I never wanted for anything. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
You know, same right now. Like we're not rolling a dough, but the kids are playing the sports that they want. And, you know, Claire's got her Lululemon stuff, which she bought, may I say, by the way.
Oh my God. That's horrible.
No, but really it's, I don't,
yeah.
For me, I get angry about injustices because they're stupid. It's ridiculous. Yeah. And I just, I get so mad that people think that they're better than someone else.
Yeah.
That's who. Right. Mm-hmm. So no chip on my shoulder, because it's been a lot of my ancestors and current demographic that have created the chips on others.
Wow. That's profound. I could talk to you for like 3 days in a row, and it's always interesting. And I always learn new layers about you. I just
that's what friendship's about. Hey,
I know it is. But we started a new tradition on the podcast, which I stole from the Diary of a CEO podcast. I don't know if you ever heard it. It's an amazing podcast. And they have previous guests, without knowing who's coming next, ask a question to the next guest.
Oh, I love that.
Isn't that so cool? So I have a question for you. And then again, not necessarily, you know, the person that's asking the question has no idea who's coming next. And the question is, what is your canary in the coal mine symptom? And just to put in context, because I did not know that, the canary in the coal mine, are you familiar with that article? So for who is not, because I wasn't. So when people used to go to the coal mines, right? It's like subterraneans, and it's the air is scarce and it gets to a point that is not healthy to breathe. So what they would do is bring a canary. It's a canary. I don't know how to pronounce it in English.
Canary.
And the canary will be singing. The moment the canary stopped singing means the air is bad. They would get out of the mine coal, right? And that was in relation to putting context to mental health. Like, what were symptoms that you see on you, your canary in a coal mine symptoms that your body's telling you, girl, we're not doing well? Or do you have that? How does this show on you?
I mean, you've known me for a few years now and we're starting to get to know each other really well. Have you ever known me to not have something to say?
No.
Exactly. So if I get quiet and I lose that kind of spark and I'm just getting through, when I start to notice that I'm just getting through the day and I'm not communicating, I'm not reaching out, I'm like, oh, I'm not in a good space. What's happening? And sometimes I don't catch it and someone else has to catch it for me.
Wow.
And that's why I say what I say about the voice for the voiceless. And I was seeing that happen to my colleagues. So, because I saw it myself. And that's my canary. When I stop singing.
Yeah. And you stop singing literally.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Before you go, can you tell us about your company, how people can reach out to you, what your company does and promotes? Promote yourself here.
They can
find you on social media, website.
So my personal handle is LYSS_EVT.
We'll make sure to put on the comments below. Yeah,
I love it. And then our company is EMP Vet Team on Instagram, EMPVET Team, all one word. It's long. Everything other variation was taken. So that's where it is. We're on Facebook. We have a YouTube channel that we're building some training videos on. So essentially what EVT is we created it knowing that we can't empower anyone really. We can provide the support and the tools and the resources for people to empower themselves. And so it's geared towards training program creation within the practices for CSRs, assistants, and technicians. Mm-hmm. We are going to work on some materials for veterinarians. We do love you. really, we are focused on the support team members because we are really cognizant that a team-based approach is how it should work from the inside out, not from the top down. And along with that, we create, we are an AABSB race approved CE provider. So we do content creation and speaking. I go around to the conferences and speak. Mm-hmm. To some of my team members. So it's just super fun that now I can be like, hey, I don't have to go. You don't want me. You want Jamie, right? Or you want Danny or you want Jesse, which is just awesome to see them shine. And really what we're looking to do is meet people where they are with what they need and really focus on taking the onus off of the person and putting it on the process.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's EVT. And
who would you hire? Like, what is your client? Just so people are very aware.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
really,
who would be hiring you or your
company? Right now, our our active clients are privately owned practices in the tri-state area. And by the tri-state area, I'm on the East Coast. So throughout Pennsylvania, New Jersey, New York, and I guess not three states. Around the middle Atlantic states is where we primarily located, but we do have team members in the Southwest and in the Pacific Northwest and up in to New England and down in Florida. So it would be for any type of veterinary practice looking to, you know, kickstart a training program or have some type of, we are a consultant, but we're not going to be like, this is what's wrong. Here mm-hmm. is what you're going to fix it. Mm-hmm. This is what we're seeing you're doing. This is how we can work with you. And then we show up. We're like a tapering pred dose. We come in strong and then we wean ourselves off so you can do it on your own.
And it's all about team building, or is it about veterinary medicine? Like the
So obviously it's a team-based approach, but it's really focusing on role clarity, team and workflow, focusing on clinical and human skills. So what are your competency-based levels? Let's not call them levels. Let's see how you progress. Let's take a look at it. Yes, on-the-job training is necessary, but who's got the time to do that and their job? So giving an external perspective and standardizing the approach to training, growth, and development.
Nice. I like. And what is the website? I don't think you mentioned it yet.
It's empoweringveterinaryteams.com.
Nice. So,
there's a shortened version too. It's empvet.team. So either one will get you. If you Google empowering veterinary teams, we'll come right up. So thankfully our SEO is working, which is nice.
I know. I just went through a lot of that myself.
Yeah. So that's the organization. And if I'm not doing stuff with EVT, then you can find me with Mentor Vet. I run the tech program for mentorship. And I spend a lot of time with the Possibilities team working on DEI and mentorship, as well as Blend Vet. That's where Lila and I spend a lot of time together, is on those pathway events to make sure that everyone knows they can get into this amazing profession. Yes, it's a little bit, disjointed. We're figuring our stuff out. And the only way we can do that is if we keep going together. So,
absolutely. Liz, thank you so much. I cannot thank you enough for being here with us. Oh, guys, where to find Liz? We need to do a part two at some time. There's so much to unpack. Thank you so much for being here. Guys, stay tuned for our next one. I promise you, it's just going to be interesting conversation after interesting conversation. Thank you so much for being so vulnerable with sharing with us. I really appreciate that.
Well, thank you for providing a safe space and being you. I appreciate you.
Thank you.
What is VetAhead, you ask? It is an immersion online education for ZoomEd. It is the bridge between patients and professionals. You can also call that knowledge. At VetAhead, all you have to do is go to vetahead.vet, make your login, and then choose among all the courses we offer for ZoomEd.